Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. It's the end of an era for both ESPN and NBCSN when it comes to soccer coverage. More details on Fox's shocking acquisition of European Championship rights. A popular soccer presenter calls it a day. You, the listeners, share your opinions about national TV ratings for MLS, plus anticipation is building for the big announcement from the Premier League. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnaiyer and Kyle Fansler. My name is Christopher Harris. It's the calm before the storm. We're recording this on Thursday, the day before Friday, November the 5th, which for if you're in England, you're celebrating Guy Fawkes Day. But for those of us in the United States, the anticipation is building. This is the deadline for the broadcasters to submit their bids and proposals to the Premier League in England. And then probably what usually happens in these scenarios is they look at the bids, look at the proposals, but it's rare that they will decide on a winner after the first round. Sometimes it goes to a second round, and the anticipation builds even more. Kartik, since we've recorded this podcast since last week, any change in the feeling of, you mean maybe who's getting perhaps a little bit more likely to get the rights, or is it still at this point? I mean, even the TV companies don't know, right? I mean, it's sealed bids. They don't know what the other parties are bidding. What's your consensus?
I don't think that there's going to be any more surprises. It's a matter of who has the bandwidth to show these matches and who has the cash resources and truly who it's important to. I mean, the bottom line is this. That's a heck of a lot of an investiture if you're an American television company for a foreign sports property, which numbers may or may not justify spending that kind of money. So that's the decision that has to be made. And we don't know how ESPN already is viewing La Liga, given that they laid out all the money they did to take those rights over 8 years. And again, we're not aware of how many people are watching ESPN Plus. And that's part of the problem when things are on services that aren't Nielsen rated. We just don't get that information. Same thing with Serie A with CBS. So depending on how those two properties are doing for those media companies, Chris, at this point, I think may determine what kind of bid they put in today for the Premier League.
Yeah, part of that, though, Kartik, is that I don't think that the actual streaming numbers are that important in terms of the viewership. It is important, but ESPN Plus, ESPN, is in the acquisition game. They're trying to acquire as many subscribers as possible. They're looking at that overall number as far as like the number of subscribers that they have. And if they do get the Premier League, how does that increase, well, the likelihood that that'll increase their subscriber numbers? So I think for them, that's the metric that they're focusing on. Now, Kyle, on Wednesday, Fox announced officially that they've acquired the rights to the European Championships. We'll get into that a little bit later. But what it does mean is that ESPN no longer has the rights to the European Championships. So ESPN has had the rights since 2008, all the way through to Euro 2020. So in some ways, maybe ESPN was saying, like, you know, yeah, UEFA competitions are great, but the big kahuna is the Premier League. What's your take on that? Do you think ESPN possibly is, letting the Euros go by with the hopes that they'll get the Premier League?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a give and take that they have to consider. So I think you're right, they might be giving up a certain asset in order to increase their likelihood of maybe getting another one. And the Premier League, as we know, is the biggest league in the U.S. in terms of viewership, or at least the biggest European league in terms of viewership in the U.S. And I think just the ability to be able to have a lead that happens every year, as opposed to the European Championships, which are obviously every 4 years, or at least they should be every 4 years. I don't know. We got the biennial World Cup. You never know what's going to happen. But back to the Premier League. I just think the ability to be able to have something that happens so consistently and already has such a big viewership base. I think they're trying to open up their opportunities, so maybe save a little bit of money by getting out of the European Championship and the international side of things and get more into the club side. They already do have the rights to certain championship games, the FA Cup, so who knows, maybe it's just them trying to get a bigger footprint inside of the English game as a whole.
Yeah, I guess in some ways, Kartik, let's go straight into the TV streaming news. There wasn't a lot to talk about from what we've been watching this past week in terms of anything controversial or anything that stood out. I think the news is really kind of, and we've already talked about a couple of the items, but the news is really kind of what's taking center stage this week. So Kartik, I'll have you kick it off with the first news item.
Yeah, so NBCSN is going to go dark on December 31st, which means USA Network will carry a triple header of Premier League games on January 1st, which is the next day, obviously, starting at 7 a.m., Arsenal hosting Manchester City that morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. British Standard Time kickoff. Those games would start at 7 a.m. Eastern, will begin a year where USA Network will carry more than 1,500 hours of sports programming that formerly had been seen on NBCSN. NBC Sports execs believe the move will lead to USA becoming the top-rated sports and entertainment channel on cable. I should point out before we discuss this further that there is no guarantee that all of the Premier League matches that were on SN will be moved to USA. Now, we know, obviously, January 1st, all of them, which is a holiday, by the way, have been moved to USA. We don't know if that's going to be the routine on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and we'll wait to see if that is the case or if those games get bumped to Peacock or CNBC. There's also talk of E-Network showing some Premier League matches potentially, so that's another NBC Universal channel, Comcast channel that they have in reserve if needed.
This is a good one to have Kyle on the show because Kartik, you and I have kind of a history with NBCSN. You mean a good history, but Kyle, for you, being a little bit younger, I mean, what does NBCSN say to you? I mean, if it's going away, is that a big deal? But also, you mean, what is NBCSN to you?
NBCSN for me was always, well, A, it was the home of hockey. Well, it was Versus and then NBCSN. And then by the same token, it was always the home of the Premier League. I think going back to 2013 when they acquired the rights, I was just getting into high school. So that was really when I started to get into more of the watching soccer side. So it was always the place to go if I wanted to watch soccer because I couldn't watch La Liga because we didn't have beIN Sports. I could watch, you know, certain leagues, but at that time, you know, the Premier League's the league that everybody wanted to watch. So I would always just jump over to NBCSN. I could always count on them having three or four games a weekend. And so, yeah, it's just it'll be different because, you know, I watch games on USA Network, but still NBCSN for me has always been kind of the hub for the Premier League. So, yeah, should be interesting. I'm curious, can I ask a question? When it says going dark, if you have a cable provider and NBCSN has a channel location, what happens to the channel? Does it just go away or what? What happens when it goes dark?
Yeah, that's a great question because there hasn't been much discussion about that. I mean, there's been so in the past, like say we're going back many years ago now. Kartik probably remembers the exact date with his encyclopedic memory. But when Fox Soccer Channel shut down after the loss of the rights to the Premier League, it went dark, and it later became that was 2012 maybe. It later became was it the Speed Channel?
Content? No. It became FXX, which was the second FX, which is now a Disney Channel. But you made a good point, Chris, about Speed and Fuel. Speed simultaneously the same day became FS1, and Fuel simultaneously the same day became FS2. There was a direct transition. I mean, it happened, as Kyle mentions, with Versus becoming NBCSN at some point, or did it become the Comcast Sports Network maybe in between? I can't remember. But there was this kind of seamless transition of channels. But sometimes the cable provider just kills the channel. So going dark, literally, if you have, for example, NBCSN is channel 220 on DirecTV, 220 might just be an empty channel for the next month or two after that until they find another channel to replace it. That's That's an interesting one. I'm trying to think of other transitions. America's Talking. Now I'm dating myself. America's Talking, which was a channel run by Roger Ailes, became MSNBC. Do you remember that? Wow. So you're dating yourself also. MSNBC.
I've never heard of that one.
You've never heard of that one. Okay, no. That became MSNBC kind of simultaneously on June 1st, 1996, I think it was, or July 1st, 1996. So there have been these, like, changes, and the Speed and Fuel one to FS1 and FS2 was in August 2013. That's the most recent example. Although I suppose there probably have been other times this has happened, but a channel actually being killed, now that I think about it, is really rare. Generally, it transitions to something else. We've had a proliferation of more and more cable channels. So that's a great question, Kyle, because as we're going through this, Chris and Kyle, I don't remember many channels actually being killed. They've been transitioned to something else, but channels haven't disappeared. So and it appears like NBC Universal has no plan to transition into an entertainment channel or a news channel or something else, right? NBC now has a million streaming channels too. So
yeah, on January 1st, if you tune into NBCSN or what was NBCSN, there'll be a title screen or title page. It'll say, "Okay, Premier League games now on USA Network. Tune in from 7 till the triple header." So how long that'll stay there, and we'll have to wait and see. That's a great question. But it is one of those things, though, that even NBCSN used to be NBC Sports Network. And then before that, it was the Outdoor Life Network. And right. when NBC Sports announced that they had acquired the rights to the Premier League, and the deal was done in 2012, it began in 2013, when the announcement was made, they said, okay, the Outdoor Life Network will become NBC Sports Network. And for the first few weeks, I actually watched Outdoor Life Network. I'm like, okay, what is this all about? I've never seen this channel, never knew it existed. And that just goes to show how much the Premier League, really, and NHL, of course, put this channel on the map. Because, Outdoor Life Network, I don't think many of us were watching that. I think these days, if you mention NBCSN, most sports fans, I would imagine, would know it, would know of it, maybe don't watch it all the time. But losing NHL and then possibly losing the Premier League, we'll have to wait and see in the next couple of weeks. But two big hits there, and potentially killing this channel.
Similar story with me, Chris. I mean, I had never... I'm not a hockey fan, so I never heard of Versus, to be honest with you, which seems really strange in retrospect. I should have had some awareness of the channel hockey was on. But Versus had the rights to the Mountain West Conference in college football, and Florida State traveled to play BYU, I think it was in 2007. And I discovered this channel because Florida State was playing on it, basically, and I wanted to watch the game. And that was the first year Jimbo Fisher was the offensive coordinator. So I didn't even know the network had existed, and apparently they had been showing the NHL for 3 or 4 years at that point. So sometimes it just depends what we're interested in to discover that these channels actually exist.
Yeah, so the history, I mentioned before that both Kartik and I have a history with NBCSN, and the history is that, we were on the leading edge of making, a lot of these announcements and interviewing a lot of the personnel within NBCSN, going to the NBC Sports Studio in Stamford, Connecticut, doing a behind-the-scenes tour, doing a video documentary, interviewing Rebecca Lowe and the two Robbies and Carl Martino and Tim Howard many, many times in the past, writing about them. If we had to pick any channel that we've written more about in the last 10 years, it's neck and neck between probably Fox Soccer Channel and NBCSN. Fox Soccer Channel is no more. Now NBCSN is no more. And I tweeted earlier this week too, when the news was made official, that with NBCSN shutting down on December 31st and then games moving to USA Network on January 1st onwards, is I have no affinity to USA Network. I mean, to NBCSN, I have an affinity. I have a brand loyalty. I have a lot of appreciation for everything that they do. USA Network, to me, I remember... I think it was like Night Flights. They used to do music videos late at night in the 80s. I remember watching World Wrestling Federation, WWF, back in the day on USA. But other than that, USA Network doesn't mean much to me. And to me, even though I know it's in more homes than NBCSN, to me, it's a disappointment. What about you, Kartik?
No, I'm the opposite. I actually think of it as a very mainstream network. Think of it as an upgrade for the Premier League. NBCSN, I hardly knew you. This is the way I look at it. So I mean, I grew up watching USA Network. They had the NBA rights for a little bit. They had the NHL, which, again, I didn't watch. But they had a lot of college football and a lot of college basketball. They actually had the MISL for several seasons. And when I used to watch indoor soccer, which I know now in hindsight, I say it was I admit it's kind of a bastardization of the sport. But it was the only soccer you could watch on television when I was a kid in the 1980s. I remember one time University of Miami played University of Florida in basketball on USA Network. So I watched a lot of that channel in the 80s, but then I guess in the 90s, it was only watching the first two rounds of the Masters were on USA Network for years, right? And the third and fourth round are on CBS. And there was that partnership between USA and CBS for many, many years around the Masters until NBC Universal bought USA and took it into the NBC ecosystem of networks, and the Masters first and second round rights went elsewhere. But so I actually have always thought of it as a high profile channel. They've had a lot of movies and dramas that I've stumbled upon through the years. I think of it kind of like I think of TNT or TBS. But Chris, where I would say that maybe I'm wrong is I thought Champions League going to TBS, to TNT, going to Turner, was going to be a great upgrade for the tournament, because I said to me, as kind of an American in my 40s, the Turner networks are very mainstream. You know, I grew up watching the Atlanta Braves on TBS and watching the NBA on TNT, or TBS and then on TNT. So I thought it was going to really mainstream the Champions League. What it ended up doing is making the Champions League in many ways more marginal than it was on Fox, right? So it's possible that happens with USA also, and I'm misjudging this, but because I view USA very much in the same light as I view the Turner channels. Mainstream, people who are non-sports fans watch those channels all the time, and it's in more homes than the sports channels that are not ESPN related. And I think when it comes down to it, any sports channel that's not owned by Disney is a second tier network, whether it's a Fox network, a CBS network, or NBC Universal. I think if it's not ESPN Disney, then it's not as relevant as an ESPN Disney channel.
That's the concern I have about the USA Network, and we don't know yet because the details have not been announced. But USA Network, you look at a typical weekend on USA Network, and I would imagine that most of it is probably movies or entertainment shows. Now, with some of the Premier League games being on there, are we still going to get even half an hour to an hour pregame show from my Premier League morning? You mean Premier League live on the mornings? Are we still going to get Goal Zone afterwards? Are we going to get the amount of coverage that we've been accustomed to getting from since, 2013 on USA Network? Or is it that as soon as the game's over, okay, cut, now we're going straight back to the movie of the day, whatever it may be? That's my concern, and we don't know yet. But Kyle, what about you? What does USA Network say to you? I mean, is that your go-to network?
No, I think I err more on the side of Chris in the situation. I got nothing against USA, but a lot of the things that I watch on TV, or I should say all the things I watch on TV, are sport-related. So in the past, I never really went to USA. I mean, I watch the Premier League games on USA now, but I'm from the generation that didn't really have too many sports on USA. So I think Kartik's also right in that Disney and ESPN are always going to be like a leg above everybody else, and they're the, like the cream of the crop. It's USA to me. I think it could be beneficial for the Premier League just because it does have such a bigger reach comparatively with more just being available in more people's homes. But in terms of my perception of it, I think you're also right, Chris, that I don't know. Are we going to get the same coverage or anything like that? Just because it'll be interesting to see if the Premier League becomes their priority and if they're going to be pushing out more sports content, or they're going to try and bring the sports lovers into watching their TV shows and movies. So, yeah, I don't know. It should be interesting. I mean, it's not like a big deal to me. I'm still going to watch the games. It's not going to stop me from doing that. But, yeah,
I think,
you know.
Yeah, I think what it does, though, too, it does add another degree of uncertainty. So, I mean, going into any Premier League weekend for the last, 8 years, you mean, if you turned on NBCSN on a Saturday morning at 7:30, most, like 90% of the time, that game would be on. Sometimes, rarely, some of those games would be on Peacock, but you'd have a familiarity with the whole weekend. You know which channels to go to pretty much, and you check the schedule now and again in case there are any big changes. Now we don't really know. I mean, we'll know. We'll see. I mean, maybe the USA games will be on the 7:30 and the 10 o'clock game, and then maybe one of the other 10 o'clock games will be on Eastern Time, will be on CNBC. If CNBC has something going on, maybe it'll be on the E! Entertainment channel. But, I mean, and a lot of these games could end up moving to Peacock, too, more than we've seen in the past. The other part of the uncertainty, too, is that we don't know. We will find out in the next couple of weeks who the rights to for the Premier League next season go to. So this might be a very short run. This could be USA Channel broadcasting the Premier League for the second half of this season, and that's it. Or it could be another 6-year deal or 9-year deal. It's everything's up in the air, and that's the part that I guess it's just the timing of this is not good. I think. I mean, if I'm the Premier League. And we know, according to a story we ran on World Soccer Talk back in January, we know that when the news leaked in the Wall Street Journal that NBCSN was shutting down and a lot of the games would be moving to the USA network, NBC Sports never told the Premier League. The Premier League found out through the Wall Street Journal, and they were furious. They were really upset with NBC Sports that they weren't given a heads up. So the timing of this being shut down, you mean right in the middle of the bidding and the negotiation, trying to get the deal, and maybe they'll get the deal. It's quite possible that they may renew that deal, but to me it just does not look good. But to NBC Sports, I guess, you mean life is much bigger than the Premier League. The Premier League is not the only thing that they have. We know that the number of cable subscribers are going down and down and down. And NBCSN is going away. It's quite possible in the future, perhaps, that FS2 might go away. There might be other sports channels that get shut down and more moves to streaming. So I guess in some ways the timing isn't perfect, but it was going to happen sooner or later anyway.
Yeah, let me make a suggestion to the listeners that if you're dissatisfied with the lack of bumper programming, as long as NBC does have the rights, which might end in May of 2022, Peacock does have the Premier League channel, Premier League TV, and they have a plethora of studio programming on that channel. I've actually watched a lot of it the last week because there have been off the pitch things, Conte, etc. Only before that, going on in the Premier League. So that, if you feel like USA is not giving you the amount of studio programming that NBCSN did, that's an option for viewers and fans of the Premier League.
It's an option, Kartik, but I've got to say that always pisses me off because I'm watching some of the shoulder programming maybe on a Saturday morning or on a Friday in the build-up with the fantasy show that they have and the other shows and interviews, which is all good content. And then Saturday morning, as soon as the game's getting ready to start, they black out.
Yeah,
they black
right,
out
right,
the
right.
Premier League TV channel. There's no so it forces you to watch the Premier League on NBCSN or Peacock or whatever channel it is. And that upsets me, too, because once in a while we've been able to see a little bit. When I've gone overseas, I've seen some of the coverage that they do, the Premier League live studios and stuff like that. It's not perfect, but it's really good at times.
It's good, yeah.
All right, so that is the news about NBCSN going away. And to me, I think it's an end of an era for soccer fans in the United States. It almost feels like, to me, when Fox Soccer Channel went away. A lot of history, a lot of good times, a lot of really memorable experiences watching the Premier League on NBCSN, as well as Major League Soccer. Don't forget, NBCSN had MLS rights for a couple years. They did a really, really great job of broadcasting that league. They had a whip-around show. They had lots of different things that they tried. To me, they raised the bar on soccer coverage in the United States. And just one more thing, Kartik, before we move on to the next news item. But you mentioned TNT. And that's, in my head, that's what I'm thinking with USA Network. I'm thinking, okay, is it going to be like a TNT experience where with the Champions League, which was such a roller coaster ride? Sometimes the coverage was good. Sometimes it was just, I mean, just so many mistakes. And watching CBS's coverage this week of the Champions League, it reminds me more and more of TNT's coverage. It's getting more into the jokey, laughing, not much analysis, and having Mo Adu in the studio, which Mo, I think, is great. I like him as an individual, but having him right next to Kate Abdo, it just brought back a whole bunch of memories of TNT Turner's coverage of the Champions League, which was overall not a good experience.
Yeah, and this goes back to what we talked about, and we'll see this break. Obviously, U.S. at Jamaica will be on CBS or CBS networks. That the coverage of the U.S. men's national team is on CBS is just all about the U.S. Team. I didn't even get any insight into Panama when the U.S. played Panama on CBS last month. Now, that would not happen on ESPN. In fact, it would be the opposite on ESPN. John Champion and Taylor Twellman, as well as the studio, the guys in the studio, Seb Salazar and Casey Keller, et cetera, would be going, bending over backwards to tell you about the opposition. So this is, CBS is going more and more in that direction, not just the laughy, jokey, but all about American players and how this American player is going to affect the U.S. national team. And maybe, Chris, people follow me on Twitter know that I've been really outspoken about the mentality of U.S. men's national team fans, that they don't seem to recognize that there are other countries in CONCACAF, and those countries have good players. I mean, they don't seem to know that Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies are these world beaters, Canadian players, right? And you can say the same thing about several Jamaican players and Honduran players, etc. Maybe part of it, and I'm blaming the fans for that. Maybe part of it is the Fox and CBS coverage of the U.S. men's national team. Maybe that's what's really driving it. And now CBS's coverage of the Champions League, where there seems to be exclusively a focus on American players or American angles to matches.
Kyle, have you noticed anything in regards to that in terms of kind of a over-focus on U.S. men's national team players playing abroad?
I don't know if I noticed the over-focus on U.S. players. I did notice the lack of focus on other players, and Kartik already mentioned them, Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies. I mean, they do talk about the U.S. players and how, Ricardo Pepi could become a great player in the future, and I'm as big of a Ricardo Pepi fan as you'll find, but, I mean, Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies, you could argue that they're two of the better and probably best players in CONCACAF, and we don't really hear their names as much. And I mean, granted, the U.S. didn't play Canada in the last international window, but I think it's still worth talking about, especially since, relatively speaking, I think it is fair to say Canada's doing pretty well in World Cup qualifying this time around. I think it's hard for the U.S. just because, you know, it's hard for, you know, CBS or just because they don't have Christian Pulisic or Gio Reyna to talk about right now, just because they're out with injury. And, I mean, it's a chance to talk about some of these other players that are trying to break into the starting lineup and they have lots of potential and they're young. But I think that if you're covering a soccer game, sure, you have an American audience, but I think you just have the duty and the responsibility to also evenly cover the other team in the game.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of certainly giving a lot of time and focus and analysis on the other team. I find it weird, though, sometimes where there's almost a sense of duty for U.S. journalists, soccer, of course, and U.S. broadcasters to talk about Canada in such detail. And the reason, I guess from my perspective, it's a little bit different. But for the average U.S. soccer journalist, or average U.S. soccer broadcaster, there's the connection, and the connection is MLS, right? You got MLS with Canadian teams and U.S. teams, and it feels like a lot of coverage about the Canadian teams. It's a kind of a sense of duty because they're in the same league. For me, not being as big of a MLS fan and not watching the league as closely on a day-to-day basis as some of the U.S. soccer journalists, for me, I'm probably more U.S.-centric. and don't kind of focus as much on Canada as others would. Now, I see talent, I see potential, I see great players that are Canadian, they're playing in Europe, etc. But I just find it a little bit weird that there's almost so much of a focus on Canada, probably more so than Mexico in some ways, even though we're all part of the same continent. All right, let's move on to talking about the next news item, which is Fox. And this is something we talked about in last week's episode in a lot of detail. But Fox this week officially announced the news that they have acquired the rights to Euro 2024, Euro 2028, and the UEFA Nations League, which will begin in June of 2022. On top of that, it will also include the all the qualification matches for Euro 24 and Euro 28, as well as World Cup qualifiers from the UEFA region. And in addition to that, many of the friendly games that are played in Europe. So all in all, it's a big package. It's more than 1,500 games. As of recording, the news hasn't been made official yet, but we're anticipating that FuboTV will pick up a lot of the rights to these games too. Fox will go ahead and cherry-pick the games that they want to show on television, obviously on Fox or FS1 or FS2, maybe even Fox Soccer Plus. And then most of the other games then will be available through streaming through FuboTV. What was most interesting, though, from the press release that came out from Fox is a quote. This is them describing themselves. And let me see if I can find that quote of how they consider themselves, because they've been pretty quiet on the soccer side of things, other than having, of course, the World Cup rights. But that was many, many years ago that they acquired that. But in the press release, Fox Sports are now calling themselves America's home of global national team soccer. So it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you could argue easily now that they in the United States, they are the global home of national team soccer. They've got the World Cup, they've got the Women's World Cup, they've got the Copa America, they've got the Gold Cup, and now they have the European Championships. So that's all well and good. But what does that say about Major League Soccer? What does that say about their reported interest in trying to acquire the rights to the Premier League? If they're the home of national team soccer, well, Kartik, what happens to MLS and what happens to the Premier League?
Well, that can supplement it because those guys are all internationals also, and it logically builds into their coverage of the Gold Cup and Copa America that they have MLS, and their coverage of the Euros that they have the Premier League. So, and their coverage of the World Cup that they have both leagues. So I didn't read into it the same way maybe you did or some others did. I think that's the thing that they'll build around, because we know how fantastic those summer tournaments are in terms of television properties. Although the fact that they didn't acquire the Spanish language rights for the Euros leaves a door ajar, basically, for viewers to exit stage left and watch on another network. But I think that it could be very complementary to club football. I don't think that it means they're exclusively going to national team and international football.
So I will go into this with an open mind, and I will give them an opportunity and start off with a clean slate. But I really hope that they raise the bar on their coverage. So I hope that they go out and hire some talented studio people. I hope they hire some really good commentators. And I hope that, honestly, that they don't try to, again, Americanize the sport by bringing in people not for the talent, but just because of their accent. So I hope that they make the right decisions. What do you guys think, Kyle? What's your level of confidence that Fox is going to hit a home run with Euro 2024 and Euro 2028 coverage?
I wouldn't say my level of confidence is high per se, but I think I'm like you. I'm going in with an open mind, because in Euro 2008, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, that's when ESPN took over for Euro coverage, and they had a pretty strong first showing. You guys would know more about this than I would, but was there any kind of doubt when ESPN took over? Because I know that we've talked about it before, and their first go-around, it went really well, and then they kind of built on that and made it into one of the the great tournaments that we all get to watch every 4 years in the summer. So I wouldn't say I'm dreading it. I'm going in. I'm optimistic, but it's a cautious optimism is how I'll describe my perception of Fox taking over the European Championships.
Yeah, no, that's a good point because ESPN, there was a lot of question marks going into that Euro 2008. Kartik, do you remember?
Yeah, there were, and I guess they got rave reviews for bringing Andy Gray over, which I didn't think was great a move. But yeah, there were question marks about how they were going to cover it, how they were going to cover a tournament without the United States in it, right? Because they hadn't had to do that previously. And what happened is they kind of evolved their coverage. They made it more intelligent. I remember Rhys Davies is the studio host. I can't remember. They must have had another studio host. Maybe Bob Lee. But I remember primarily Rhys Davies. And they had Andy Gray in studio. They had Derek Ray and Adrian Healy calling matches, which was good. And they were able to kind of transition from being a very kind of MLS and U.S. national team centric network, even in how they had covered the World Cup, right? The 2006 World Cup. I mean, we complain about Fox and we're complaining about CBS now, right, and their hype of the U.S. national team, but really, Chris, the ultimate hype machine was ESPN going into that 2006 World Cup, where they basically left a lot of viewers in the U.S. who didn't know much about the sport. We didn't have all this access to club football then from Europe. The sport wasn't nearly as popular in this country as it was now. They basically made the case the U.S. could win the World Cup. They acted like the U.S. was one of the favorites in the World Cup, and they based their coverage around that. So, yeah, Kyle makes a great point. Going into 2008, now that I think back, we were very skeptical of ESPN covering the tournament. And what it ended up doing is it ended up transitioning their model from a completely U.S. and MLS-centric model to a much more kind of cosmopolitan, intelligent, broad-based model. And maybe the Euros does the same thing for Fox 16 years later.
Yeah, it's funny. It's because we have hope that Fox can be better for the Euro 2024 and Euro 2028 because ESPN was so bad after that 2006 World Cup. Really, really awful presentation.
Yeah, the worst World Cup on U.S. television was ESPN in 2006. It was awful.
And the turning point, though, was Euro 2008. That was the turning point. We had, I think, Derek Gray did a bunch of those games. Like you said, Andy Gray and Bob Lee and others. And they made a serious commitment to say, okay, we're not going to talk down to the audience. We're going to go ahead and talk intelligently, really share the passion for the games and not focus on the U.S. Well, obviously, the U.S. wouldn't have been in a Euro 2008. But your World Cup 2006, for those that remember, Dave O'Brien was the lead commentator from ESPN, a baseball announcer that had never done soccer before, and it was awful, absolutely awful. So Fox has an opportunity to right the wrongs that they've done.
And specifically on the Fox issue, Alexi Lalas, we had doubts about going into Euro 2008 and Euro 2012, right? And he raised his game in the studio for I know newer fans may not want to hear this because Lalas is a very polarizing figure. But he showed at ESPN when they covered the Euros, he could pivot into a very kind of intelligent Euro analyst. I mean, a lot of what Lalas does, I think we would all acknowledge is shtick, right? It's you know, right, he's even come on our podcast and said his job is to entertain. So he can pivot and be this kind of savvy, soccer savvy analyst who takes things from a perspective of a former defender and analyzes games that way. And he did that in the ESPN studio during the Euros, when in 2006 he was every bit as U.S.-centric and as bad, really, as he's been at times on Fox. So I actually have a lot of faith, more faith than everybody else, that Lalas will probably be a good studio pundit. Now, I don't know who they'll have host, if it's going to be Rob Stone and how that goes, or they'll probably have to have a rotation. But I think Kyle makes a great point raising ESPN in 2008. Now that we think back, Fox, our expectations for Fox are probably higher than they were for ESPN going into that Euro, and they did hit it out of the park.
So, Kartik, we talked a lot about NBCSN and the end of the era for them. This is an end of an era for ESPN's coverage of European championships from 2008 all the way through to 2020. it's been a great ride. I mean, that Euro 2008 did set a kind of a milestone for a turning point for ESPN. And their coverage, I mean, tournament after tournament seemed to get better and better. They really perfected really kind of the model that, that they've been doing. And it is top class. It is a it's strange in a way, because it felt, watching European Championships on ESPN, the level of coverage often felt like it was, you were watching a World Cup tournament. And you could compare the Euros to the World Cup and say, okay, yeah, it's a different type of tournament. You mean different teams, obviously. But the level of, you mean, analysis, the level of production, the level of talent that was available, that were brought in to call the games on site, etc. I mean, it's been a fun ride with ESPN. And, I mean, hats off to them for some really, really strong years of European soccer focus that nowadays, for an average soccer fan in the United States, the Euros mean something. It's really a meaningful tournament. I go back to before the Euro 2008, probably 2004 Euros. I was watching it on pay-per-view. You mean each game was available for, like, I don't know, $20, $25 per game. We've come a long way, and I think a lot of that is due to ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't find a place to show me the Czech Republic-Greece semifinal match that I was desperate to watch in 2004, and I never saw the match because I was going from pub to pub, what I thought were soccer pubs, and no one had paid the pay-per-view for that match in 2004. So yeah, those were dark days. And now the European Championship is maybe not on par with the World Cup, but is seen as a very big deal for a lot of American soccer fans, a lot of fans in this country. In fact, I it's not on par with the World Cup, but it is kind of in some ways on par with the World Cup with some fans. So that's a lot of that is ESPN, and we have to give them full marks for it. And I would say that their coverage got gradually smarter and better through the years. 2016 European Championships are arguably the best coverage we've ever had of a major international tournament in the U.S. The way ESPN was able, and it was also circumstances, right? Because of what general strikes in Paris and hooliganism from Russian fans and English fans, etc., and Croatian fans, that they were able to take the elements of their smart kind of cosmopolitan coverage that they had developed by that time, having experienced studio hosts like Bob Lee and Mike Tirico, you know, the best of the best in the U.S., and then they brought in Steve Bauer for that tournament, who's, for me, one of the best presenters from the U.K., and also had the resources of ABC News and ABC News' bureau in Paris. And to me, that's still the model. That was the best tournament coverage I think we've ever seen on U.S. television, was Euro 2016 from ESPN.
Yeah, I have to wonder, too, about talent at ESPN, because you look at the Euros going away from ESPN. You look at the possibility of them losing the rights to U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team games in the deal coming up soon, that it looks like ESPN may not get those rights. We'll have to wait and see on the final decision there. There's a lot of question marks about whether or not ESPN will get the rights to Major League Soccer. That's a possibility, but given all of those kind of dark clouds, there's also the possibility that they might get the Premier League. So in many ways, whether ESPN gets the Premier League and or continues their deal with MLS will determine, I think, in many ways, whether some of the talent sticks around at ESPN or ends up moving to other places. One person that stands out in that is Taylor Twellman, who I understand his contract is up within the next 12 months. That could be a person that might say, you know what, maybe I'll look at, have some talks with Fox and see. I mean, they have the World Cup, they have the Women's World Cup, they have the Euros, and of course all the other tournaments too, Copa America, Gold Cup, etc. If they do acquire either MLS or the Premier League, some of those rights, that's a possibility. You could actually see some of the talent moving from place to place also. All right, let's move on to Kyle. Kyle, you've got some news too to share.
Yeah, a relatively small one comparatively speaking, but Jeff Stelling, he announced that this season's going to be his last as the lead presenter for Sky Soccer Saturday. And I'm not sure how many American fans are actually going to know who Jeff Stelling is. I think during the Ted Lasso season 2, he was the one who was on the show with Roy Kent is how people might know him now, but he does exist in real life. He's a real person. He hosts a show that's kind of like a whip around show, covers all the tiers of professional English soccer. Every Saturday, they do all the afternoon kickoffs, and they send out reporters everywhere for those who don't know what Sky Soccer Saturday is. But yeah, he's kind of an icon for Sky. He joined the program in 1994. He's been doing that ever since, this whip around coverage. So it's a tough day for fans of his. I know he provides a lot of energy, a lot of fun commentary. It's an overall enjoyable program to watch, Sky Soccer Saturday. So, yeah, a tough day for that. Obviously, he's going to have the rest of the season, of course. But, yeah, farewell Jeff Stelling.
That's right. Yeah, definitely a legacy of British football coverage. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is RJ. RJ says, we've heard a lot of speculation on where the English language rights might go for the Premier League for the next contract cycle. But I was curious if you know the plan for the Spanish language rights. NBC Telemundo are a natural fit. Are there other networks that might partner with a Spanish language network, or will it be two separate packages? So, great question. I mean, in many ways, it depends. So, if it's a Fox Sports putting in a bid, they would be smart to go ahead and combine that with the Fox Deportes for the Spanish language audience. Same thing with ESPN Deportes. It's smart to kind of go for both the Spanish language and the English language rights. Univision's always one that could partner with somebody or just pick up the Spanish language rights for that. Kartik, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this is where Univision has always been at a distinct disadvantage vis-a-vis Telemundo in terms of their kind of ownership model. And we know now with the Televisa situation, maybe Univision's approaching things a little differently than they did previously. Will they then partner with somebody? I think it's possible if it's CBS or ESPN still wants to do things in Spanish and get Spanish language subscribers to ESPN Plus, which I don't think is ideal really for the Spanish language audience. And Deportes is really faded in importance as a channel. In fact, it's been dropped by some cable systems. So, or dropped a tier. I mean, it's offered by everybody. Disney channels are all offered by every cable system, but it's been dropped a tier in some cable systems. So, I think. I think maybe CBS would be the best bet for that. But this is where the Premier League has to think about, again, NBC's utility. Because NBC's utility is that they bring Telemundo to the table also. Now, we haven't seen the huge uptick in ratings in Spanish that maybe we would like to have over the course of the last 9 years, where NBC Universal has had the rights and Telemundo and Universo have been showing matches. And Universo, I guess, was Mundo's, right, before. Where those channels owned by Comcast, NBC Universal have been showing the Premier League. But I think it's probably a better bet in terms of getting a Spanish language audience more engaged to keep it on NBC, within NBC's family. So that's something you have to consider. And I think that there's also maybe the sentimental aspect of you've had Andres Cantor, who is a legend and is known as a legend even in the UK, calling Premier League matches now regularly for several seasons because Telemundo has had the rights. So that might be another thing we hadn't talked about previously, Chris, and I wrote a whole article about this and neglected to mention this. That might be another factor that's in NBC's favor, is that they have Cantor at Telemundo, and that's a big deal in terms of perception and name and gravitas for the Premier League.
Yeah. However, though, I mean, Telemundo still got struggles as far as they definitely have the best broadcaster, the commentator, but they're not HD in many cities nationwide. Univision's got more bandwidth as far as channels that they could show, and have TUDN, which is a dedicated sports channel. I mean, it's sharing with telenovelas and other dramas, etc. Same thing with Universo. So I think Univision has the edge there. If they could hire Andres Cantor, which I don't see happening, that would be, I mean, a dream come true there for Univision. Mike says, although I don't have any interest in the English Premier League, I was recently asked to complete a survey that sought my interest level and opinions on Premier League content and games appearing on Amazon Prime. Not only was I surprised by getting asked to complete the survey, I was surprised by how much the add-on would cost, without going into specifics, partly because I don't know if I'm able to discuss it. The price would rival a NBA League Pass or NFL Sunday Ticket subscription cost. If nothing else, the survey convinced me that Amazon is extremely interested in acquiring some form of the rights for the Premier League. Is it possible that, say, NBC gets partial rights to air the biggest game or two of the week, and Amazon Prime would have the season pass for everything else? Currently, NBC has a similar deal with the NFL in that they are able to move a more appealing NFL game that was previously scheduled for a 1 p.m. or 4 p.m. time slot to their Sunday night game of the week. And that's a great point by Mike, and some great insight is we probably haven't discussed Amazon as much as they should be discussed. Because, I mean, it solves the English language, Spanish language issue. I mean, if they had rights to, say they acquire the rights to everything, one package, and they go for everything. And now to watch the Premier League, the only place to go to is Amazon and Amazon Prime Video, English language and Spanish language. That's a possibility. Or it could be a deal with, like, Amazon could do a deal with Univision where Amazon says, okay, we're going to stream all the games in English. If you want to watch the games in Spanish, they're on Univision. What about you, Kyle? Do you have Amazon Prime? And would you be interested in, how much would you pay for an add-on, kind of a subscription pass for all the Premier League rights, for all the games?
I do have Amazon Prime, but I don't use it for video, and I'm sure I'm missing out on something there in terms of just content in general, but really Amazon Prime for me is just, can I get my packages in 2 days? Do you know how much an add-on for, like, the NBA League Pass or NFL Sunday Ticket usually costs? Because I use Fubo TV, and those kind of come in that package, so I don't know how much a specific and just set aside add-on costs for those specific leagues. And I think if in order to make any kind of assessment or judgment in terms of how much I'll pay for the Premier League, I would need to know how much the American leagues cost first, okay. Especially since it's, you know.
Okay, all right, guys. All right, so here we go. So the price tag for NBA League Pass for the full season is $200. Or you can pay $30 a month. So would that be, is that something you would sign up for?
I think so. If it's just, I mean, it's $200 and that gives you access to every game outside of a handful that if what Mike's talking about, NBC just handpicking a couple every weekend, I think $200 seems like a fair enough price, especially since I'm blanking on the number of games in a season. So
yep, it's 380.
So you figure at least 300 games would be selectively on Amazon Prime. So I think that's a fair enough price, especially for a real soccer fan that tries to follow as many games as possible and keep up with the league in general, as opposed to just the big six teams or the major storylines, which I'm sure NBC, if this was the case, that they would try to focus on and get those games onto their channels.
So we go with a monthly subscription price of $29 a month. Now, there are people that complain about ESPN Plus being too expensive. There's people that complain about Peacock being too expensive. I mean, you go all through every single streaming option that is a paid streaming option. People complain about the price. But $29 a month, do you think that is doable for the majority of soccer fans?
I'm not sure I'm the person to ask necessarily, because I've done add-ons on Amazon Prime already. Like, I do, I get Stars every month via Amazon Prime in the History Vault. And I paid for NBC Sports Gold, which was a ridiculous price considering it gave you like 30% of the games. So based on that rate, $200 for all the game is about the same as NBC Sports Gold was.
Okay. Well, in some ways, we're probably like the worst people to ask on this question, because I'm paying $250 a year for a subscription to watch every single Swansea City home and away game. And, I mean, yes, $200 for the whole season for the Premier League is a big number to consider. But I guess if you break it down to the per game level, and had access to all those games, it probably wouldn't be as bad. Or the $30 a month, that's a lot of money. But for fans, I guess for the hardcore fans, that would be something for the most of us that if we're interested in watching the Premier League, I think we'd be okay with paying if we had access to every single game. Even if some of the games were on television, we would want to have access to every single game. We wouldn't want to have to jump through hoops. But yeah, there's definitely... it's definitely a possibility, definitely something to consider. Let's move on because we've got a bunch more to go to. Serie A, David's got a question here. He says, a while back, Paramount Plus said they would provide Italian language commentary for Serie A games. What happened to this? I have tried using the Android phone app, the Roku app, and the Chrome browser to watch Serie A games, but there does not seem to be an Italian language option. Is Italian only available using certain versions of the Paramount Plus app? So in regards to that, David, we will have a story. By the time we publish this podcast, we'll have a story on worldsoccertalk.com that will go into detail and will explain to soccer fans exactly how you can go ahead and get watch the games in Italian if you want to. From this past weekend, from what I understand, every single game was in Italian, available in Italian, as well as, of course, English language. But depending on what device you're using, there's a few different steps you can take, but we'll spell those out on worldsoccertalk.com to show you how that works. Moving on, JP, in regards to last week's conversation about MLS TV rights and TV ratings, and the whole question mark about watching games locally, on regional sports channels versus nationally on, you mean kind of your ESPNs or Foxes, etc. JP says, sure, I've said this before, but the fixation on Major League Soccer's national popularity should not be the focus. It's a regional sport, just like all the other sports on the American landscape, except for football and maybe NBA for a few select teams only, though. Like all other sports fans here, fans follow their local team and might follow nationally for the playoffs. MLS is no different, except the fan involvement for the playoffs, if their team is involved, is far less than other sports due to the popularity of soccer. This model works perfectly fine for Major League Baseball and National Hockey League, where teams usually have very good attendance, but national TV ratings for regular season are lacking, though local ratings on RSNs are very good in most markets. Dave says, great points by JP about baseball and NHL as analogs for MLS. Layer on that, Major League Baseball and NHL are arguably worldwide pinnacles of their sport. MLS is good and improving, but few would argue it is the worldwide pinnacle of soccer, where a devoted baseball fan probably watches national Major League Baseball games. A devoted soccer fan may or may not watch national MLS games. Greg says, Kartik has a good point that there are too many damn teams in the league. Yes, the European leagues have around three times or four times as long as, have been around for three times or four times as long as Major League Soccer, but they also have 18 to 20 teams. So it's easier to keep track of them, especially considering 15 are perennials. And the others are usually rebounders. Only every once in a while do you have to get to know a brand new team and players. So yes, focusing on national ratings for Major League Soccer is a fool's game. They should focus on local ratings and attendance, away matches on air, on free or local low-cost TV streaming options, build loyalty to that club in that city, develop strong rivalries, and market big stars and teams league-wide the way that Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL do. Having a marquee league players or teams is good, gives casual fans something to pull them in, gives local fans something to root against. Of course, they'll never do promotion relegation, but that would be great in terms of adding jeopardy to the results. So some really good feedback there from Greg, Dave, and JP. My thing with this, I totally understand where all three are coming from, but Major League Soccer is competing against La Liga. It's competing against the Premier League. It's competing against Liga MX. It's got a lot of tough competition that NBA doesn't have, that NHL doesn't have, that NFL doesn't have. So when you're competing for your audience, you have to develop a national strategy in terms of trying to get more people watching those games nationally. Because at the end of the day, when it comes times for TV rights deals, if your numbers are stagnating or dropping and the competition is increasing slightly or greater, then you're going to lose out on that TV money. And that's going to get harder and harder as the time goes by.
The entire kind of construct over the value of regional sports networks was based on how popular baseball is in some of those markets. And again, everyone makes good comments that baseball is not getting the great national ratings that it once did, actually. But regionally, locally, MLB has a huge context that increases the values of those RSNs, which MLS doesn't. So it's aspirational to say MLS is trying to achieve that because they're not there. So not only do they not have a national TV strategy, in most of their local markets, they're nowhere near the relevance of an MLB franchise or an NBA team.
All right, let's move on. Liga MX. Dave says there was discussion about the popularity of Liga MX teams relative to Major League Soccer and Europe in the United States. A commenter noted that Chivas can outdraw Galaxy for a game in Los Angeles, while Carl noted the scarcity of Liga MX jerseys in the Tampa area of or Central Florida. You may already be aware that the distribution of national origin among the Hispanic population varies significantly by geography. In Los Angeles, most of the Hispanic population is of Mexican origin. By contrast, most of the Hispanic population in Florida is not of Mexican origin. And totally, yeah, we get that. And it's good to note, but it is one of those things. I think, to me, I go back to the language more so, where there aren't a lot of English language fans of Liga MX. But there are, for example, tons of Spanish language and English language fans of Real Madrid or Barcelona. Last question here is from Chris. Chris says, as a Fubo subscriber for almost 2 years, I am very impressed with how much they have grown since then. They have become my alternative to cable because I am able to watch my favorite leagues like the Premier League and have been able to follow leagues like Liga MX and Ligue 1 much more closely. Also, Fubo is one of the few providers in the US that carries beIN Sports. There is something that I've always wanted to ask you guys about the World Cup rights beyond 2026. My question is, who do you see as the favorites for those rights, especially if Fox decides not to renew? That's a great question, and it could be anyone, really. And when you think about it, I mean, CBS has come out of nowhere in the last couple of years and has acquired a lot of the rights. That's definitely something that I'm sure they'd be interested in. I mean, you go down the list. I mean, ESPN would be interested, especially after having not had the rights for so long and having lost those to Fox. NBC at that point might be interested in getting it, especially given they got the Olympics. I mean, that's an opportunity to. I mean, I think it's anyone's game. And who's the favorite? It's too early to tell, really. All right, guys. If you have something that you want to ask us, we'd love to read your comments out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So, in closing, be sure to listen to the podcast every Thursday on your favorite podcast players, whether it's Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on the iTunes or Apple podcasts. We'd really appreciate it. And Kartik, this is the final weekend before the international break. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.